because we saw there are a lot of initiatives for women in boards, right? All the quotas are really focused on boards. But then a research came out of like how many or what is the percentage female talent on junior positions in private equity, for example, and it was 17%.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the community and event manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. On today's episode of the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I am speaking to the co-founder of Female X Finance, Leonie Kennepol. Leonie is a huge advocate for women in finance. She herself studied finance along with her co-founder and realized, well, not to no one's surprise, that the finance sector is quite a male-dominated environment. They both then figured out that there is a lot for companies to learn about attracting, hiring, and retaining women. But there's also a lot of ground to be gained for women to learn more about the finance sector and what it actually looks like inside, because it is quite a fun industry, as she describes. Well, today we talk about specifically why companies, as an example, the finance sector, are having such a hard time with attracting, hiring, and retaining women. We're talking about where in the recruitment process companies are losing out on women, what companies can do to figure out where their challenges lie, where their bottlenecks are. She shares a lot of tips on what to do in terms of employer branding, but in general, how to, on the one hand, hire more women, but also retain them better. And then she has a few more, I would say, nuggets of wisdom that she shares that companies can already implement tomorrow. And it comes down to data, but also raising awareness around what it is like to work in the industry and what traits candidates have that might be more successful than others. Without further ado, I really hope that you enjoy this episode. All right. Welcome, Leonie. It is so great to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited.
Very excited. This episode has been a few weeks in the making, and looking at the questions right now, I think this will be a really interesting conversation, one that we haven't had on the podcast. We are talking today about women in business, women in finance more specifically, and we are centering the conversation more so around why companies are having such a hard time attracting, hiring, and then also retaining women, especially in finance. I think there is lots of business industries where they are just generally and historically very male-dominated. Finance will be no different. You'll tell us all about I Won't Steal Your Thunder. With that said, I would love to give you the floor to introduce yourself and Female X Finance.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yeah, so my name is Leonie. I'm the co-founder of Female X Finance, which is a platform where we connect young female talent with the finance sector. Started this with my best friend, Melanie. We met actually during our studies. We studied finance together, and we both had completely different experiences. So Mel eventually got an internship in M&A, for the people who know finance, and after that, private equity. And how did you get there? She happened to be at the birthday of her dad, super classic, talking to one of his friends. And he said, if you want to work in finance, you should start at M&A. And I know someone where you could do your first internship. So that was her first step into finance. Whereas my network in finance was quite limited. My dad is an accountant, and I always said, I don't want to become an accountant. So that was off the table. But then where do you start? And that's where I really saw, and it is still with male-dominated sectors, is that it's really your network is your net worth. So if you have a network within the finance sector, in this case, it's quite easy to get in. But if you don't have the network, it's quite hard to get in. And it starts with the lack of role models, right? Seeing yourself in the sector, but also getting invited for interviews and also acing your interviews. Because if you go on an interview and you don't know what to expect, you will probably fail because it's quite competitive. So therefore, we started Femo X Finance, because on one hand, we saw that companies really want to invest in diversity, but they have no idea where to start. So we help them with attracting and retaining talent. And on the other hand, we help women with a network in the finance sector, educating them on what's out there. And third, connect them to companies for internship and analyst positions. So 2.5 years in, and right now I'm in my office in Amsterdam. We work with 55 companies and a community of 4,500 women. So it's going great so far, and we're really in a momentum. So that's really good to see.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear. I think, well, as we talk a lot about D&I on the podcast, there's such a growing need for companies on the one hand to focus on D&I, mm-hmm. but to also really bring in that aspect of diversity as an asset, not only a box to check. And I think you do such an amazing job in centering the conversation about how can women actually enter the finance sector. Because in our introduction that we had a few weeks ago, you talked a lot about, well, there is quite a lot of women who study finance, but then they actually end up completely in a different field. Why do you think that is, that women study finance, but then never end up in that field?
Yeah, I think it's really the lack of awareness of companies in the finance sector. So we work a lot with, for example, private equities, venture capitals, and they're quite big names in the industry. But if you study, you only hear the big names, McKinsey, BCG, Bain, right? More the consulting companies. You do also hear the big banks, but that can be a bit scary also sometimes. So what we saw, and also why we started Femo X Finance, because we saw there are a lot of initiatives for women in boards. Right, all the quotas are really focused on boards. But then a research came out of like how many or what is the percentage female talent on junior positions in private equity, for example. And it was 17%. While I was looking around in my studies like, well, this is more than 17%. So we did our research. And if you want to start something in finance, you have to use data. So then we found out that in our studies and also in all of the Netherlands, actually 30% of the people who do a master in finance is female. So there we saw really data that showed, okay, there are a lot of women interested, but eventually don't end up. So then we did a bit more research, like what is indeed the main challenge here. Why don't they start in finance? And it's, first of all, the image, right? The male-dominated sector isn't really inviting for women. If you go to the websites, always make a joke, like no one wants to work at those companies because it's so business, formal, etc. Well, if you go into the companies, it's so much fun to work. There are a lot of young people working there, but that's only something you see if you go inside of the offices. So there's just a lack of awareness and therefore also interest in the finance sector to work in. And that's also what we're tackling with Femo X Finance. We always say we make the finance sector fun, cool, young. If you go to our events, it's not all black suits. No, we had a few weeks ago, Finance Fiesta, right? Wear colors. There were salsa dancers. We make it really cool. And therefore, we really inspire the next generation because they come to our events and then we invite our partners on stage and they can really tell from their perspective why they start in finance. And I think that is especially like not only for women, actually, but for the next generation in general, employer branding is key and doing it differently is key.
Yeah, yeah. Great summary. I was going to hop on that employer branding wagon that you just introduced. Yeah. It sounds like there's two sides of the story, right? There's on the one hand, that awareness piece for women to actually know, okay, what does it actually look like to work in that field? And not only what does the website look like? And on the other side, companies just missing out on women even applying because they're just, their employer branding is geared towards men and geared towards, well, their target audience that they've had historically. If we want to shift gears a little bit to the recruitment process now, other than employer branding, which is a big part of recruitment anyway, to fill that funnel up front, why or sort of where else are companies losing out on women during the recruitment process?
Yeah. So indeed, first, what I talked about, really awareness. So that's attracting female talent. So it's also what we see when companies come to us. They either have challenges with getting female applicants in general, or they do get female applicants, but don't hire them. And that is really the interview process, what we see. With a lot of companies, it's still made by men for men. So that also means they assess each candidate on masculine traits. So if you have more feminine traits, which women are more likely to have, they don't see you as good as a fit for the team, as they would probably do with someone with more masculine traits. Luckily, we do see a shift in there, because what we also saw is if you assess people like that and you, so there are two scenarios. One, they don't hire women, so they don't offer a position because they think, yeah, she's just not the right fit for the team. Or they do give an offer because they say, okay, we need to invest in diversity. But because they didn't like the process, or they have a really bad aftertaste after the interview process, they reject the offer. So it's really important to invest in your recruitment process and make it as smooth, slick, but also fun as possible. Because also, that's also what I'm saying right now, also to companies, it's not anymore maybe about women, but it's about masculine, feminine traits. And also the next gen, they want to see you, your culture. So first sell yourself. The market changed, right? Where a few years ago, you could still be harsh and everyone wants a job. Right now, they have a lot of jobs to pick from. So you need to be the most fun, but also the best employer.
Yeah, this is actually, I think, opportune time for companies to change their game because it's a candidate-driven market now. You need to adapt to what candidates expect from you, and the expectations have changed. Definitely with the new generations, with us already, it has changed what we want from a job, what we want from an employer, what they care about. And D&I is such a big value that our generation and then the generations after us really, really subscribe to.
Yeah,
which 100%. Is, I think, such a good assessment on your side as well. You said something else there, which I would love to go a bit more into detail, which is that feminine, masculine trait matrix. Could you explain a little more what exactly employers might be looking for when you say masculine traits, and what are we missing out on in these feminine traits?
Yeah, sure. So what we see, especially in the finance sector, it's really deal-driven, right? Sales. Also, when you go higher up to partner level, you're responsible for getting the deals in. So a commercial and sales is really important, but how they see commercial and sales is really the typical sales guy that you have in mind right now, right? Really extroverted, really confident, saying this is it and no further. While more feminine traits is way more working with empathy, really long-term relationship building, etc. More trustworthy. So also sometimes a bit more relaxed in sales conversation, which is a really good tactic, actually. But because a lot of companies in the finance sector are still male dominated and therefore have more masculine traits, they think that is the way to go in sales. But the fun part is right now in finance, we really see it shifting because their clients are entrepreneurs. And women, there's more and more women that are entrepreneurs, or they're working with family funds, and more daughters are taking over the family funds. So they need to also have more feminine traits within their team to also take those investors or clients on board.
Yeah, it sounds like there is, again, a great match with what the market might require from financial institutions, and what the shift should be towards having more women in the team. Yep. What you also said, which was quite interesting to me, I think there's a lot of conversation around women in leadership, and you also said women on boards. Do you see quite a big difference between those junior positions being filled and the gender split that you see there versus what's happening maybe higher up in the tree? Or is that still the same battle that goes on?
No, I think like the higher you go up in the tree, the less women, of course. But what I do see with companies is that they start focusing on retention around the age of 30, right? Because then they think, okay, women will probably think about kids, etc. So then they will start investing. Well, we talk a lot to women, and they actually already know, based on the culture, based on the job that they're doing in their first year or 1.5 year, when they see themselves working long term in this sector, yes or no. So that's also what we really try to there shift the conversation to splitting, like from splitting it to basically combining the two challenges. Because eventually, if you do your work really well, starting with your recruitment process, the onboarding and your culture, then you will make sure that you attract young women, but you will also retain the women higher up. And if you also make sure that you have a culture where people feel that they can be honest and speak up about how they feel, you know, before they think of leaving, they have some challenges instead of after they left. So, of course, there are different challenges in every career step, but it is good to already tackle them before women start thinking about them.
Yeah, such a, well, the trifecta of having a solid recruitment process and the onboarding, and then, as you say, sort of that trust that you build within the values of a company.
Yeah,
I think definitely. Those will hopefully boost that well, the lack that we're seeing of women in the industry. So a hard one to get right though. It's not easy to get that right.
Super hard indeed. Yeah. And I think there I think the biggest tip I have there is just start a conversation. And not only with what I see with a lot of companies right now, having groups with women to inspire women, but also invite men. Have one-on-ones, right? Because if you really connect on a personal level, they're also more willing to open up. And that's not only what I said, like, of course, like with Female Explains, we focus on women, but we see that this is really important in attracting and retaining the next generation overall. It's about honesty, openness, and flexibility.
Yeah, it's universal traits, I would say. Obviously, we always center the conversation about the underrepresented groups. The historically marginalized groups as well in business, which I think is super important. But what you say obviously holds true. It's sort of a universal value that we should all subscribe to. Now, if someone's listening and thinking, well, that is my company, even if they if they might not be in the finance sector, they might have an issue with attracting and hiring women. What do you suggest where they start on the one hand, figuring out what are the challenges? Maybe they might not even know we have a lack, but where is it? We actually don't know where the bottleneck is. How would you suggest listeners might tackle that issue? Where do you start?
Yeah, so I think indeed really good point. Like, what is the challenge? I think a lot of companies come to us like, we can't find talent, so we want to work on recruitment. So could you maybe forward some candidates to us? Like, well, that's not how it works. If it worked like that and diversity happens overnight, I would be happy to do it. But it's a long-term commitment, right? It takes time, it takes money. And really to first pinpoint what the challenge is, data is key. And what we've also seen, because we started working more with data within Female X-Finance and our partners, is that a lot of our partners have never looked at the data. So try to look. I think a really great example is we had a conversation with a new partner, and they said, we have limited female hires, but we're not sure where the bottleneck is. So we said, okay, do you have data? How many, what is the male-female ratio applicants? What is the percent of women that you invite versus the men that you invite? What is the percentage on each stage in the recruitment process that women pass and men pass? And then we saw that whenever women applied, they got invited faster because they have diversity targets, right? And they have way more men also applying. But in the case interview, all women didn't make it, or they didn't perform well. It's like, okay, well, this is a case, then we should look into the case interview. Yeah, indeed. But they never looked at them themselves. So I think really starting with data is really important. And you can focus that on the recruitment process. So applicant to hire ratio, indeed. But also eventually the retention ratio. And if you've then pinpointed your challenge, then you can also look into a possible solution. So if your challenge is getting female applicants, then you should focus on the awareness and employer branding. Is your challenge you do get female applicants, but they don't pass the process, then you should focus on more inclusive hiring strategies and your interview process. an issue challenge, we have 50-50 on analyst level. But after a few years, they all drop out and they go to other jobs. Then you should really focus on, do we have the right culture also to retain women?
Yeah. And are there enough opportunities for learning and development?
Yeah,
to move definitely. Up to actually not touch that glass ceiling and then have to get out because you can't move up.
Yeah,
I think that is also a huge issue. But yeah. That is for a different podcast, but it's definitely something that needs to be seen holistically. As yeah. you say, as soon as you've yeah. identified your challenge or your bottleneck, then you can work on, well, how can we really drill down what the issue is and how can we yeah. how can we solve it? Great takeaways here. I think most companies really like to look at diversity metrics or quotas as a prescriptive metric, and that solves our problems. Sort of are on the short list of candidates, we need 2 women, 2 men. I think that'll mm-hmm. solve our issue. And then yeah. we pick the best candidate, whatever that might mean. And it mostly means, as you say, on those masculine traits,
yeah.
Which is very, yeah, it's a questionable metric anyway to say, well, we want the best candidate. What define best, right?
What yeah. indeed, what is the best candidate? And it's for everyone yeah. super different. Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. Indeed. And then the way that you frame it, I think is quite nice to say, okay, let's look at the descriptive data first. Look at what our drop-off is in each of those mm-hmm. conversions or each of those steps.
Yeah.
And then see, okay, where do we experience the most drop-off or where is that clear glass ceiling in the recruitment process already.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and if you have really identified that challenge, then you can do more qualitative research. So it isn't always fault of, for example, not being inclusive enough, etc. It could also sometimes be just not knowing how to sell your company to female candidates, right? Mm-hmm. So we also work with companies and they had such a nice culture. They have a really good recruitment process, but they just didn't know how to sell their company. So in the finance sector, everyone says we're super hands on and we have a really fun culture because we do the yearly ski trip. Everyone says the same. So that's also why we start with Female X Finance. First, really dive into what makes you special, what makes you unique. And that is so important also when you're attracting the right talent.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good exercise for companies to see, okay, what makes us unique? It's not the yearly ski trip, I think, or the Freimibo, the Friday afternoon drinks and the ping pong table is the scale ups have it. Maybe finance doesn't really, but that's definitely those sort of stereotypes that feel a bit like a box ticking exercise. We have the regular meetups and that's why it's fun. Yeah. On the topic of fun, you mentioned recruitment processes are not really inclusive and they're not really made to attract or to sort of sell the company to the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see the most where fun is lacking and what do you then advise companies? What is fun?
Yeah. So I think a really good example is when Melanie and I were interviewing ourselves, right? You go to a company to see, do I want to work there? But also to show I want to work and I'm the best candidate. But a lot of companies in finance were really, okay, first interview round, I always thought it was an introduction or motivation, and they fire technical questions at you. So how do you value a company? Have you looked at our website? Which portfolio company did you like best? Could you make a SWOT analyze about it? So you were completely overwhelmed and you didn't even I thought, okay, I first need to know whether I want to work here. Because this is also quite new for me, especially when you're interviewing for junior roles or internship roles. So what we always give as tip to our companies, the first round is always a coffee chat without technical interviews. Why? Of course, the candidate needs to sell themselves, but you also need to sell yourself. Because it's a candidate-led market. They're not only talking to you, they're talking to multiple companies. So try to make the experience indeed as fun, but also as personal as possible. Because if you make the first round really about, okay, the fit, then the second round, of course, you can focus on technicals and more the hard skills, but then they already know, okay, this is really a team I want to work in. So they also put more effort in the interview process. And that's something we really see. And I think it's the same with, for example, e-assessments, right? So I know e-culture really focuses also like on fun gamification. Well, I also did a lot of tests that were just like numbers crunching. And you see, like, you saw the time ticking. It was super stressful. And then what we also see is that a lot of candidates don't even finalize the test. And yeah, I think, okay, yeah, let it just go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not my definition of fun either. Yeah. I think, yeah, what you said here, just a few things. One, definitely that companies tend to forget, especially if it's companies that can sort of rest on their laurels because they have, they're part of the big four, what have you, have a huge reputation for being a reputable employer. They might forget that candidates also look at other offers. You need to sell your company as much as they need to sell themselves to your company.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way street. That's one. I think that's such a good one to start with because, well, the first impression, obviously, it might be or the job ad already, but then in a first interview, that's your first impression. If you do not ace that as a company, then you've already lost them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, also true. Like the first interview or the first connection with the company is super important because even if it's not a match, but the candidate still has a really nice experience, the candidate will tell her friends about, oh, I was at this company. Unfortunately, I wasn't the right fit at that moment for them, but I really enjoyed the conversation. So maybe you could be a great fit. And eventually referrals in this market are key.
Yeah. Word of mouth is everything.
Yeah.
It really is. It's true. And then what you also said about assessments, it's not only the fact that on the one hand, it's hugely stressful for the candidate to crunch all of those numbers, as you say, or to fill out a personality questionnaire, trying to guess what they want you to say. But it's also the lengthiness of them. Sometimes they take hours and that's really hindering. Well, on the one hand, finalizing them even. Some people don't even finish them because they're like, I'm out. This has already taken me 3 hours in total. I can't, this is it. And then the case afterwards, I'm not messing with that.
Yeah. So no, that, but really, it's also what we see indeed.
Yeah. Go on.
So that's also what we see, that indeed timing and efficiency within the interview process is key nowadays with the next generation. They want to move fast. So if they are interviewing at a company, indeed, where you have to write a motivational letter, you have to send your grades, which also can also be a bit stressful. And then also you have 5 interview rounds, for example. Yeah, you're missing out on candidates because another company is having a really quick assessment, will invite you within 2 days for a cup of coffee. Then they will give you 1 week to prepare for the interview and then they give you an offer. Those are the companies that win nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then what you also said, I think slots in really nicely with the requirements that are even on the job ad, the hoops that candidates sometimes have to jump through, what they have to show to even get to that first interview is beyond me.
Yeah.
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 No, we also have a few companies that we work with. And then if they have like an intern and the intern performs really well, then they still have to do a few interview rounds to get an offer for an analyst. Well, I think, huh, you just work with this intern for 3 to 4 months, performing really, really well. What is then the idea of having other interviews? So.
Yeah. I'm struggling to understand it as well. My assumption would be that they really want to see again how well you can sell yourself.
Yeah.
To really sort of how badly do you want it? But shouldn't it be enough that you've already showed that you perform well and that you were consistent in those 3 months?
No, and I think it's also really about like the personal touch and trust. So that's also, I think, maybe a tip for listeners. If you have a really good candidate, just call them the same day and say, we really like your offer, not through a recruiter, but really personally yourself. I think what we also see if the interviewer calls herself or himself to the candidate and say, we really like your profile. We really want to have you on board. That is so personal and so flattering also for the candidate. Then they basically can say no.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. That might be a good way of hiring those women that would have been knocked out in the meantime, or who might decline, as you say, might decline an offer because they had an unpleasant experience in the recruitment process.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on the topic of tips, you shared quite some already, but I'm going to quiz you on a few more. I'd love to hear a bit more about your inclusive hiring tips, how to impact the rates of women.
Yeah, so I think one of the best tips is don't be stuck on a resume. I think within the finance sector, we still see, okay, you need to do a finance master's, you need to have done your internships, etc. What we see, if women have done an analytical study, they can teach like the finance skills. But the fit with companies, especially also in the finance sector, because the teams are quite small, is way more important. So if you see a resume, don't only look at the resume, but look further than the resume. So I think in the finance sector, for example, it's quite important that someone is entrepreneurial, did a lot of things next to their studies, or traveled, for example, not only the experience one. And that way you can really widen your talent pool. Another tip that I also give companies that are recently starting with also investing in getting more female talent. What I said, it doesn't happen overnight. So it's a long-term commitment and it's a journey. I think one of our best cases is a company we work with from the start. They started with one managing director and 30, she was female, and then 30 men in the team. Right now they have more than 50% women within 2.5 years. And how did they start? They opened their doors basically for everyone. So bachelor student, master student, technical background, finance background, business background. Why? Because then they can really show the culture, because they already had a really nice culture. So they invited all the women in. Was it for coffee chat? Was it for interns? Anything? And right now, they only get women in that are almost graduating, etc., which was their target pool 2.5 years ago. Right. But right now they can really fill those profiles because they invested in the younger generation, which are right now getting older after 2.5 years. And right now everyone wants to work at that company because 2.5 years, a lot of candidates had a really great experience at that company. So I think investing in your talent pool every step along the way, and also widening your talent pool by not only looking at the resume, but also listening, for example, to a recruiter that calls you, hey, I think this would be a great match in terms of fit. Just talk to her. I think that are two really good tips to take into account.
Yeah, those are wonderful tips. I heard Kobe Ampoma talk yesterday about a tactic that he uses, which he calls the wild card, which is exactly what you just talked about. Let the recruiter bring in someone who might be a 45 to 50% match on your hard requirements, but bring them in because in our case now, it's a woman, and mm-hmm. see how they perform in an interview. And they might blow you away, even though they might not fit all of the boxes that you need. But because, as you also say, they're a good fit, they have that entrepreneurial mindset, they might have all of those transferable skills, they might be a really good fit. So that goes really well with it. And as you say, widening your talent pool is just, well, it's all the rage right now. I don't think that anyone really knows how to do that. But you gave a really good example of saying, let's let off of all of those hard requirements or that laundry list of things that we want to see in a candidate, and just have an open conversation, have that coffee chat, hire someone as an intern who we might not have hired before. And that also boosts your employer branding, of course, because as you say, well, word of mouth really goes a long way. And it is a long game. I mean, 2.5 years isn't really an overnight success, but it is a huge success.
It is a huge success. Back. I think if every company could do this within 2.5 years, that would
be incredible.
Done with it 2.5 years.
the amount of money that companies would probably pay in order to get to that example that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
In that long game, 2.5 years, that's really not a lot of time. If you start now, No. 2025, you're there, right?
Yeah, but indeed the key there was really being flexible with your requirements. And still, I also understand, right? A lot of companies are still struggling with that, especially smaller teams, because they don't have the room to educate people. So they want people that already have a bit of like knowledge in finances, Excel and PowerPoint, and that they can bring those skills because then like they have a good start within the company. But yeah, there are also other ways to learn those skills than just with an internship.
Yeah, no, very true. And then the last thing I want to reiterate what you said earlier, which I think is just a brilliant point, that use of data to figure out where your challenge lies. Can you look at your recruitment process step by step and see where the drop-off lies in order to figure out what you need to work on, where your bottlenecks are? I think that's that's a brilliant way to round out this list of tips. Is there anything else that you think we should touch on, or do you think that was...
No, I think we covered quite a lot, and I think also a lot of information to digest for the listeners. And indeed, I think what I repeated multiple times, it's a journey, right? So also some companies come to us and say, we don't have any women. We don't know where to start. I know we're failing. No, you're not failing. Like that you're already reaching out to us or to any other company that like already shows that you're committed to changing this. And it's never too late.
No, it's never too late. We'll leave all of your details, of course, in the show notes. Incredible work that you do. To anyone who might have a friend who's studying finance, send them to your events. I think it's a wonderful community that you're building over there. It's huge already, which is a testament to what you're doing. We'll definitely share all of your links. Please, everyone who listens today, also follow Leonie and Melanie as well on LinkedIn. They're quite active, have lots of things to share, lots of great things that they're doing over there. With that said, Leonie, I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I also learned a lot, so I'm sure that our listeners did too. Hope you enjoyed it too.
Definitely. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Maybe we can do this again in the future. There's lots more to uncover in this topic and in this niche. But for everyone who listened today, I thank you so much for listening. I hope to see you in the next one. Please let us know what your takeaways were from this episode. Reach out to me and to Leonie if you have any more questions. Well, probably be for Leonie. I hope she's definitely open to answering all your questions, I'm sure.
100%.
Perfect. We'll leave your links down below. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you in the next one. Bye.